Okay, so we focus now on the latest in the situation in Ukraine, the Russia-Ukraine war. We have two guests, Scott Lucas from the UK. He's the founder and editor of EA Worldview. He's also a professor at the University of Birmingham. Scott, good morning. Welcome once again.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And live from Italy, we have Monique Camara, co-host of the Kremlin File. Monique, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Radio Islam International.
Thank you and good Thank you.
All right, Monique, if I can start with you. What would you say is the current political situation in terms of the Russia-Ukraine war?
Well, let's say in a nutshell, the Ukrainian government is still functioning. It's in place. I've spoken to high-level Ukrainian parliamentarians, and they are all completely focused on keeping attention on Ukraine. And of course, each MP is also providing all of their efforts to the battle on the home front, because they're dealing with all of the necessities of the battle itself, but also for internal domestic policy and everything. All their institutions still need to keep going. So let's remember that, you know, all of those civil services need to keep going. And then we have, of course, President Zelensky, who is in this moment probably one of the highest profile politicians in the world. His secret is that he is leaving, let's say, all of those big military decisions that need to be made to the military. Obviously, he's speaking with them, and this was revealed in an article in the New York Times. But his role principally in this moment is basically to keep focus on Ukraine and reaching out to international all of the 40 members of the alliance that have come around, and making sure that he is communicating those needs to the international community. And this is what's happening now. So this is, let's say, the whole country right now is behind its war effort. And it's been highly, highly successful politically in keeping the alliance together. And here we're talking about the Baltic states, Poland, the United States, the UK, for example. So that is the, let's say, in a nutshell, that is the political situation at the moment.
What about the military situation, Scott? I read something last night where some are hinting, or not hinting, but they're indicating, their opinion is that Ukraine is fast becoming Russia's Vietnam.
Well, I think, let me give you another quote to summarize where we are, which is from an advisor to President Zelensky last night, who said the fate of this country is perhaps being decided right now. And the reason why this was said is that in the first 3 months of the invasion, Russia suffered a significant defeat over its initial objectives. You know, it's Vietnam, if you will, in that it failed to capture the capital, Kyiv. It failed to capture, probably kill, Ukraine's leaders like President Zelensky. It had to withdraw from all of the north, despite having this overwhelming force. Mm. So what it's doing now is it's trying to focus on a more limited gains of territory, seizure of territory in the east, what we call the Donbas region, as well as in the south, where it finally took the city of Mariupol. It wants a face-saving victory. It is willing to shell civilian areas and to kill many civilians to get it. But Ukraine continues to resist. There's fighting around a key city called Severodonetsk. If Russia cannot succeed in taking cities in the Donbas to expand its control there, the question then is whether Vladimir Putin finally puts his hands up and says, look, I failed to make Ukraine part of greater Russia. Now I'll go back to the negotiating table.
Why have they failed militarily?
Because for all the advanced equipment that they have, for the sheer size of this invasion force, and it was 60% of Russia's active ground forces were involved, as well as much of their naval and air forces, they did not have adequate supply lines. They did not have adequate logistics. They did not have an overall commander. It was left to individual commanders in the field. It was micromanaged badly by Vladimir Putin. And as a result, when they could not win this battle within the first few days, because the misguided idea was the Ukrainians would rise up against the Zelensky government and overthrow it, when they couldn't win it in the first few days, they suffered from low morale amongst their forces to the extent that many Russian troops refused to go back in for a second deployment. So now they're at the point where they're having to call up men over 40 to try to make sure they have enough troops, even for this limited offensive in the east.
Monique, what's the situation like inside Russia? We know Russians are very nationalistic. The indications initially seemed to be that, despite the reservations, they would rally behind Putin. Has this remained largely the case, or are things starting to change significantly?
No. Yes, it has, actually. I have had occasion to speak with many people who are Russians, both inside and out. And as we know, there is still a lot of support for this war. And that stems for different reasons, Suleiman. Mm. There are, let's say, we can sort of look at it in, it's divided into different, let's say, age groups and also geographical areas. Russia is a vast nation. And it with different cultural groups, and also let's see the divide of rural and the city, the urban areas. But in general, there is support for the war. We know that, for example, the Russian authorities and the Russian state has a very, very tight grip on let's say its messaging on media. There is no, let's say, free media, the free press in Russia does not exist at this moment. They are getting information, though, this is true, but the way that the Russians are spinning it is that they simply come out honestly and say, well, yes, this is our propaganda, but we are up against the propaganda of the West. And you are either on our side or you are on their side. So this is, I'm reading something that Julia Davis had written about this. She is a Russia media watcher and has been for many years. And this is her assessment of the situation. But even speaking with other people that I know, this is definitely the case. The majority of, let's say, Russians are in support of it. There are a few voices, Suleiman, that I think this is what we're now talking about before. There are a few voices of dissent that are coming out. The latest, for example, that was published was from Bondarev. Okay, and he is the Russian representative at the UN in Geneva, actually. And he wrote a scathing letter of resignation, an email to his fellows. And he also did an interview, which was very interesting, with Kenneth Roth, again in the New York Times, where he said that there were others who had sent in their letters of resignation, but they did it quietly. Okay, so there are voices, but it's very, very, there's a very, very small portion. I think what kicks in, especially with the Russians, is that they are, they've come, how can I put it, they've rallied behind the state, right? And this is, I think, a natural process. But that's the situation inside economically, and that will kick in later on. Right now, let's say the Western sanctions that have been put on by various countries, that will take time. That's a long game. It's not something that will happen, because right now there's a very, very tight grip. Nabiullina, who is the head of the Russian Central Bank, she has put in, for example, stringent control mechanisms in order to keep the ruble inside Russia. So this is, but they will have problems later on. Not right now, no. So let's say those factors that could impact public opinion are not there yet.
So Scott, on that point, right, we've spoken about the political situation, we've spoken about the military situation. Economically, how's Russia managing to deal with these sanctions? And what's the impact globally in terms of food and energy in particular?
Well, Russia is hanging on economically at this point. We're only 3 months into the war. We're only 3 months into the expanding sanctions, but already they've taken an effect on Russia. Many companies have left Russia. International companies have left. The Russians finding it very difficult to trade or invest internationally because of sanctions on their financial sector. Two things really keeping Russia going right now. One is that the central bank intervened massively, and I do mean massively, to try to make sure that the currency didn't collapse. And with the raising of interest rates and with the use of most of their foreign reserves, they have prevented a financial meltdown inside the country. But secondly, and Monique knows this well, it's that the Russians still are selling their oil and gas at about the same rate as they did before the invasion. And until you get the implementation of sanctions against the oil and gas sales, especially to Europe, the Russians have this economic lifeline that keeps them going. Meanwhile, I'm glad you brought up the global situation, because the Russians are not only trying to effectively occupy, destroy much of Ukraine, they are blackmailing the world, because what they're doing is, for example, blockading Ukraine ports on the Black Sea. And given that Ukraine and Russia combined provide about 30% of key commodities such as wheat, it means that not just millions, not just tens of millions, potentially, you know, 200 million people facing food insecurity around the world because they can't get this wheat, they can't get, you know, basic commodities out of Ukraine. So you have that global food crisis with the Russians refusing to do anything to alleviate it. And then you have the potential knock-on effect on energy supplies, again, not just in Europe, but around the world, as you face higher prices because the Russians are saying, look, you know, if you put sanctions on our oil and gas, you'll be the ones who suffer. So this is a war which is not just confined to Ukraine. When Vladimir Putin invaded that country 3 months ago, he in some ways invaded all of our lives.
So, Monique, will Putin be forced to negotiate sooner rather than later?
No. That's the short answer at the current moment. There are no, let's say, negotiations that are going on. And the ones that we've seen, for example, in the past, those are basically all for show. There are two points here, I think, that are important, is that Russia uses, for example, negotiations or the offer of negotiations, for lack of a better words, as simply a way that they can regroup and, let's say, restock their troops and their military. So this is, you know, this is the way they do it. There are none. There are some signals coming out, but they're all pretty much mixed, right? We have, for example, Lavrov came out with some statements the other day by saying that they would like to get closer in some sort of relationship with China. But then he also said in the same statements that he would prefer, Russia would prefer to keep with the West. Medvedev's statements yesterday that were highly critical of the Italian peace plan, the peace deal that they had forwarded, he called it an insult. So there's a lot of mixed messaging. Right now, they are Putin, the military, the people that are around him, they are simply concentrating on fighting this war. There are no, let's say, they have no will right now for negotiation. Will he be brought? It's really if he wants to go to the negotiating table. It doesn't work. We cannot force him. He will decide, and it will be his decision. It will not be, let's say, that the West says, okay, you've got to get to the thing. The only way that we can get Putin to the negotiating table is through his defeat in Ukraine. That's simply the way to go by this. So that's that. So other signals, the only other thing that I'd like to say about this is that there are some disturbing signals that have come out from the West. As we know, there are different blocks, right, inside the West, these 40 countries that are supporting. But there were, I believe, yesterday Kissinger at the World Economic Forum, if I'm not mistaken, and Scott will correct me on that if I've made a mistake, that, you know, Kissinger is saying that basically he's calling for Ukraine to cede territory for peace, but that's simply not something that, you know, that's been echoed also by a New York Times editorial board article that had come out. So there are quarters, Germans, for example, the Italians and the French. But that simply won't materialize. And the only way to get Putin to the table is through defeating him on the battleground.
Monique and Scott, we thank you both for your time this morning and for giving us that very interesting overview of the latest in the Russia-Ukraine war. We really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Monique Camara, co-host of the Kremlin File, talking to us live from Italy. Scott Lucas, the editor of EA Worldview, talking to us live from the UK, giving us an update on the Russia-Ukraine war.